Hey, nurses! This National Nurses Week 2025, it's time to celebrate you, the backbone of healthcare, with a vacation you truly deserve. Join Nurse.com for a luxurious group cruise aboard Virgin Voyages, sailing May 9th through May 14th. It's a celebration like never before, designed exclusively for nurses. Picture this. Tranquil ocean views, world-class amenities, and the chance to connect with your nursing community while leaving the stress of long shifts far behind. Plus, when you join us, you'll receive $200 in onboard credit per cabin to enjoy spa treatments, premium excursions, merchandise, and more. You spend every day caring for others. Now it's your turn. Let's trade scrubs for sandals and sail into National Nurses Week with joy, connection, and well-deserved relaxation. Register now to join the group trip at nurse.com/cruise. That's nurse.com/cruise. We can't wait to celebrate you. Hey, nurses. Welcome to the Nurse Dot Podcast, giving nurses validation, resources, and hope one episode at a time. Today on Nurse Dot Podcast.
In the last 30 years, that paradigm has changed where now nursing does own its own profession. This is really about scope of practice, working at the top of your license, making sure that you have a voice in the care of that patient. And that's really, to me, why Magna is so powerful, because it really does stand for all of that.
Joining us today, Maureen Lau, DNP, RN, the Senior Director of the American Nurses Credentialing Center's Magnet Recognition Program. With over 30 years in nursing, her dedication to excellence has shaped her career, from earning degrees at Johns Hopkins and Duke to helping drive magnet recognition forward since 2010. She's here to share her insights, experiences, and passion for advancing the profession. This is a conversation you won't want to miss. I'm your host, Kara Lunsford, registered nurse and VP of Community at nurse.com. So, Maureen Lau. Welcome to the Nurse Dot Podcast, take two, since we tried to do this yesterday, but I failed miserably as a podcast host. So welcome back.
Well, I'm delighted to be here, and technology can just be challenging sometimes.
It's so
true.
No worries. It's so true. And we're so reliant on it. And yet it can disappoint. It can really disappoint at times.
Yes. Yeah. When it's great, it's great. Otherwise, it's just a challenge.
I can tell already we're going to have so much fun. Okay. So can you tell me a little bit about yourself? Like, how long have you been in the nursing industry, and how did you find your way towards Magnet?
Sure. I actually was one of those people that always wanted to be a nurse, right? Like, that was always my goal. And when I was in high school, I grew up in upstate New York. And when I was in high school, they had a pilot program that you could get your LPN while you were in high school. And so I took the course. I graduated. I also had my LPN license. And my first job, the work environment was incredibly toxic. It was a horrible experience. So here I had thought, like, I had this whole plan, get my LPN, it's going to pay for me to go to college. I don't have to worry about loans and things. I'll work, I'll go to school, graduate. And I was like, no, I don't think I want to be a nurse. This isn't the right place for me to be. And so I got a degree in humanities. Then fast forward a few years, I was married, I had my children, and I just kept feeling like I was a nurse and I wanted to be a nurse. And so I went back to school, got my RN, my associate degree, then got my bachelor's and got my master's and my DNP more recently. I would say I've done this the longest, hardest way possible. But the reason I tell that story is because that drives why I do what I do and where I am today. Because of that work environment experience, I never want to lose another nurse because of what I experienced. I never want to have another nurse have to work in that experience. I was fortunate that I was able to quit, get a job doing something else, and continue my education. But it really did drive the majority of my decisions once I had the opportunity to understand and really think about, had the maturity really to look back at that experience and realize, no, what we permit, we promote, and I need to be somebody who no longer allows that to happen.
Wow.
I love that. Well, anyone who's listened to this podcast for any length of time will hear me say that our past experiences are so influential and so important, and the hard things that happen in our lives are oftentimes sometimes by design, because they put us on our path, right? They put us on the path to do exactly what we are meant to be doing. And I think that that's exactly the case for you, right? Like, it just like drove you right into this path.
Absolutely. It has absolutely formed who I am as a nurse and decisions I've made. I loved patient care. It was never really my intention to move from it as quickly as I did. But it was that idea of making organizational change and having the ability to have that impact that has driven really everything I've done.
It's amazing. And, you know, it's really wonderful when I think back, because I worked at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, and I was there during the time when we were getting magnet accreditation. And I remember what our CNO and our CEO and what they were doing, and the huge celebration that we had when we were awarded designation as magnet, how exciting that was for us. But you know what's so interesting is that I was actually, I can't remember exactly what year that was, but I know I was like in the midst of really being a relatively new nurse, you know, within the first like 5 years or so of my career. I've been a nurse for 17 years, but I'm looking back and I'm thinking, well, it was definitely during the beginning, and I didn't truly understand at that time what it meant. Mm-hmm. I was just too busy trying to figure out how to be a nurse.
Yeah. You worked with Mary D. Hacker then, who was...
I did.
Yeah, because actually when I first joined ANCC Magna, I worked as one of the analysts, and I had California, and that was one of my hospitals, and I worked with them during their second designation, so...
Oh my gosh, that... What a small world.
I know. I was like, when you were telling that story, I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I was there with you.
You were there with me, and I remember this video that was done, and these pictures, and there was all these mountains of paperwork that had to be submitted. And yes. I remember a picture of Rich Cordova at the time, and it was Mary D. Hacker, and they had all these like mountains of papers, and I was like, that looked like a lot of work. And that was as much as I knew at the time, but I thought that was a lot.
Yeah. Well, and back then the documents were even more onerous than now, which I know our magnet organizations would say, how is that possible? But we used to limit the size of the document that was sent in to 15 inches because they were all hard copy. We didn't have e-copies at the time. And so we would actually have to measure them, because some people would send us like 25 inches. So we'd be like, there's no way, you know? So, oh my gosh, can you imagine now?
I can't. So, okay. So we're going to assume that many people who are listening to this actually do know what magnet designation is. But for people who are not privy to that information or don't know for some reason, can you tell the listeners a little bit about, like, what is magnet? How did it come about and what is it exactly?
Sure. Well, I'll start with where magnet is today as part of ANCC, the American Nurses Credentialing Center. And it is one of the programs that does organizational credentials along with Pathway to Excellence, Nurse Credentialing, Professional Development, PTAP, the Practice Transition Program, and APFA, which looks at the transition for PAs and APNs. So it's a family of credentials that all sits together and they all leverage each other. But what sets Magnet a little bit different from the other ones is we are built from a study. Back in 1983, I love telling this story because it's so pertinent to where we are today. Back in 1983, there was a shortage very similar to what we're experiencing today. And at the time, when you think about how revolutionary this was, because at the time, nurse research was just not known or done regularly, but there were these four nurse researchers through the Academy of Nursing, the American Academy of Nursing, who said, why is it that some hospitals don't have a problem? Why is it that they can keep their nurses? They don't have problems bringing in new nurses, hence the attract and retain magnet idea. And they did a study and they looked at those hospitals and said there are 14 forces that really do bring in those nurses and they engage the nurses. Then in 2008, another study was done. And they said, absolutely, those same 14 characteristics are the same today. However, there's been maturity. There's been evolution of those same characteristics. Like instead of participatory management, it changed to shared governance. You know, some of those, it was just a maturity of processes. So the current model includes the empirical outcomes, which is based on the Donabedian quality model, where we look at structure and processes and then outcomes. And Magnet says, okay, you have to have the outcomes to really demonstrate that what you are doing is indeed effective. So along with that, they said, you know, we really need to be contributing to the bigger picture of nursing. And so they also brought in nursing research as one of the hallmarks of Magnet. So that's really where we were today with the 2023 manual. Each manual has raised the bar. It's looked at what's currently happening. It's all evidence-based. Every time there's a very big deep dive into that. Now, the exciting piece is right now, there are two independent researchers doing a look at what they're calling Magnet 3.0. So they are looking at not only all of that history of Magnet and where we are today in the current post-pandemic climate, but they're also including international because Magnet has really grown to be a global, as all the ANCC programs have, but we have several of our organizations that we work with in the global arena. So really proud of that and the ability to influence care, not just domestically, but throughout the world.
So I feel like you have to tie everything back to outcomes, right? Like, because obviously if the changes that you're making within your organization do not result in, well, A, either better patient care and better patient outcomes, you know, and if they don't result in less attrition. So is that part of the outcomes? Is that where you look at the attrition of a hospital and you say you still qualify or you don't?
So we don't look at attrition per se. What we look at is nurse engagement. So we do require organizations to provide benchmark data. So it has to be through a third-party vendor. It has to have a national comparison group that has a meaningful comparison for nurse engagement, patient experience, and also clinical indicators. Because we know the commission absolutely understands it's a tie between the three of those criteria. If you have a nurse that's not engaged and they walk into that patient room, and we've all seen this, unfortunately, but they walk in and they say, oh, I'm, you know, really busy today. I have six patients and, you know, what do you need? And here's your meds and goodbye. That patient is less likely to say, do you have a moment? I really need to walk to the restroom. I really need to have something. And instead they get up, they try to go to the restroom on their own. They have a fall. Now you have the traumatic, the emotional response to having experienced a fall with injury, but your delayed care, an increased risk for other injury. So with the three of those tied, the Commission on Magnet back in 2008 said, we really have to know how you're doing. We not only need to be collecting that data, but how do you compare? And actually, I was still working in the clinical setting when we started having to submit that data. And I always say this story because I remember it so vividly that we were insulted. Right? Like, what do you mean we're not doing a good job? Of course we're doing a good job. We, you know, we take care of our patients. And then we saw that benchmark data and we went, we're doing a really good job on this, but there's some opportunity over here. And we also, I don't think as a profession, really understood how our care as an individual could directly impact the long-term outcome of that patient. And I think that's something that has really changed in part to collecting that data and understanding how we impact that patient.
So how was that data collected? You know, from different, because obviously we know that there's different softwares available now, there's different patient experience and employee engagement and different survey platforms, and technology has really made a lot of this easier for us. But there was a period of time where it was very paper. I mean, there was just a lot of paper.
Absolutely, it was. And it was a lot. But I will say, we don't really get involved for the vendor benchmark data with the criteria and the definitions. We rely on the vendor that they have contracted with. We do review the vendors just to make sure that what they're collecting aligns with what we require, like at the unit level, that they have the right benchmarks, that they have the right questions that correspond with our evidence-based questions that we know are valid. So we look at that, but we don't look at the other pieces, because it's really up to the vendor, especially for clinical indicators, to have a consistent definition. And then it's up to the organization to be applying that definition and to ensure that they are indeed following the guidelines that vendor has set up. So we don't really get involved with that. But what we do is we really look at the data for that, what we call outperformance, meaning that the majority of their units are doing better than average, than the average benchmark the majority of the time.
Okay. Okay. And so prior to there being some of these vendors, was so much of this done internally, or do you know? Like, I'm always curious how people are collecting information and how that changes over time, right? Like, is because I keep looking back on like mountains of paperwork. That's like the visual in my head of how labor intensive that could be.
So with the 2008 study, it was still pretty new, that whole idea. I'm sure organizations were collecting data, but that whole idea of using a vendor and being consistent with it was actually, it's hard to believe in 2024 that it was that recent, right? It seems like we should have been doing this forever, but we just didn't have the, to your point, technology. We didn't have the knowledge base. We did a lot of things in nursing for a very long time because we always had, right? We didn't have the evidence behind it. It seemed to work, but nobody had actually researched it. And so again, it go back to the evolution of nursing as a profession, how we really moved from a role that was seen as an extension of the physician to being a profession. You know, we provide 80 to 90% of all patient care, whether you are ambulatory or inpatient. You are the person that is the go-to for that patient now. When we think about owning our profession, we think about autonomy, we think about being able to contribute to research and conduct research. We think about the fact that we are identified as a profession. But when you really look at how our roles have changed in the time that I've practiced, in the 30 some years since I did my LPN, and I think about, we used to stand up when the doctor walked in, you know, we used to wear caps. Can you imagine the germs that we were carrying around and, you know, some of the things that we did with the best of intentions?
Yeah.
But
of course,
was not to the benefit of our patients. So now, in the last, you know, 30 years, we really have, that paradigm has changed, where now nursing does own its own profession. And if they're not, then I say, please do, because this is really about scope of practice, working at the top of your license, making sure that you have a voice in the care of that patient. And that's really, to me, why Magna is so powerful, because it really does stand for all of that.
How many hospitals within the United States, and I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but how many hospitals have achieved Magnet designation?
I do know that. Currently, we have 617 organizations. However, 16 of those are from the international. So we have 601 domestic, which is about just short of 10%. It's about like 9.75% of hospitals. And we take that data by the number of hospitals according to the AHA, and we do that calculation based on that.
Wow. And how, and again, if you don't need the answer, this is okay, but like on average, how would you say that a Magnet hospital compares in terms of turnover to a non-Magnet hospital, like in like just even percentage wise, like, you know?
Yeah. So I don't have current data, but last year when you looked at national average and the Magnet organizations, so this is unfortunately 2023 data, we're lagging a little bit here. But at that time we had, the Magnet organization showed about a 13%, whereas nationally it was about 27%. So it was significantly less.
Wow, it's like half.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the pandemic absolutely impacted everything. Nurses, we hear anecdotally from organizations that the framework absolutely helped them, but we also know that there were a lot of challenges everywhere, and there was not a magic framework or anything that could be in place, as much as we all wish there could have been during that time frame. So, you know, as we continue to see that recovery, we are seeing that Magnet hospitals, actually Magnet and Pathway to Excellent hospitals, are recovering quicker and have really returned to some of that data of, they have higher than non-Magnet hospitals for nurse engagement scores and some of the, that other data. I'm always cautious, though, and I love that I can say this publicly, because I always get a little anxious when I see studies that say Magnet versus non-Magnet. And I say, always take that data with a little bit of critical analysis, because remember, those non-Magnets might be using the framework but haven't applied. They might actually be an applicant but not yet designated. They might be a pathway organization. They may have a great framework in place. And so, you know, that data is not as clean as you might hope that it could be. I would love there to be three comparison groups of Magnet, organizations using the framework or the pathway framework, and that truly that hospital that's not yet really understood the value of an evidence-based framework to their organization.
Mental health matters. Become a master's prepared psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner at Nightingale College. If you are an RN with a bachelor's degree in nursing, you can take the next step in a rewarding career move where you'll develop advanced knowledge and skills in assessment, intervention, and management within the construct of the psychiatric mental health patient-provider relationship and patient-centered care across the lifespan. This CCNE accredited program is now taking applications for the fall 2025 semester. For more information, please visit nightingale.edu or call 801-689-2160, because mental health matters. What I'm guessing that there's some soft cost and hard cost to even going through the magnet process. You have to have the people and the resources and the time and to be able to apply for something like magnet. I'm sure it takes a certain amount of people power just to do that, and could be the reason why some organizations are like, we're going to follow the framework, but we're not going to apply, or we don't have the funds, or we don't have the people power to do it. Would that be true?
So, yes, there are, you know, a lot of times we hear about the cost of magnet, but it's really not so much the cost of the program. Just like everybody else, we have to pay. One of the values of magnet is that it is a peer review program, and we have to pay people to do that work. We have to pay our internal team. We pay for brick and mortar, just like everyone else. So, yes, there is a fee, but the bigger costs tend to be those internal costs, as you say. We still use in nursing, which is terrible language, but that non-productive time, which is, of course, a misnomer because it's very productive time, but it's at time not spent at the bedside. And so when you look at the cost of putting a shared governance in place where and other committees so that nurses can really contribute to having a plan and influencing where they are, the environment they work in, the care they are providing, that is time not at the bedside. So yes, it does cost money. But again, when you look at that return on investment, when you invest in your nurses, when you invest in the framework, then you're ultimately going to save money because we know, to the point we made earlier, that there is decreased turnover. Research tells us this. It's not Maureen Lowell making this up. It is really data-based, and we have reference to some of the studies on the website. We know that patients tend to have fewer falls. And again, when you look at falls with injury, and every time you prevent one of those falls, not only the actual impact and the delayed care, the longer length of stay, potentially more surgery, all of those pieces that are cost, you know, they drive costs, but there's also the psychological cost, not only to the patient, but to the nurse that was caring for them, or the physical therapist, or whoever was providing that care. So is there a cost? Absolutely. But you have to do an analysis of your environment, and you have to really weigh that out. There are other costs. Some organizations, we talked about the vendors. There's a cost for vendors. But you have to be collecting data anyway. CMS says you have to get data for them. So you're collecting data already. So that's not really the cost of the program. Some organizations use consultants, which absolutely, if you need a consultant to come in and help you put a framework in place or to help with that assistance, there is a place for that. But those are those indirect costs versus the direct cost of what we charge and what has to come into the program.
Where do most people find consultants that could help? If you are an organization that is saying, well, we might be a little stretched thin, or we might, are there a variety of different organizations that provide that type of service, or a place that they can go to?
Well, there are multiple vendors out there that provide consulting services. I will tell you, we have a big firewall, even with the ANA, the American Nurses Enterprise consultants. They do not get any extra information. We do not have a relationship. It would be a breach of credentialing if we shared anything about the review process with the consulting group. Again, no matter who they're part of, ANA or otherwise. So we can't really speak to that because we really don't engage with them. What they're doing is independent to us. And we do have a lot of resources within the program. As we always say, we can't consult, but we can coach. And we have a lot of coaching tools that we provide, which means we can't tell you the how. Just like the program itself, the framework itself can't tell you the how. We can tell you what should be in place. How you do it is going to look differently depending on your organization, the size, the resources, where are you located in the U.S., where are you located in the globe, you know, across the world. If you're located in a, if you're a critical access hospital in the middle of Nevada, you know, it's going to look very different than if you're an urban hospital that's associated with an academic setting. So, you know, it really is going to be dependent on where you are. But what we also know is it doesn't matter what the size of your organization is. We have hospitals that are as small as hospitals slash acute critical access as small as 25 beds, and we have those that are over 2,000 beds. So anybody can use the framework and can be designated, but it just depends on those priorities and whether you choose to move it forward. We always say two things. Even if you don't want to go for the credential, that's fine. Use the framework, because the framework will benefit the nurses and the patients. And we believe strongly in that. That's why I do this work. The other thing we say is, if you choose to get the credential, what the credential does is it shows the world that you have that nurse engagement in place, that you have those patient outcomes, that you have all of that. But almost just as importantly, if not more, is it holds the organization accountable. Because if you don't continue to feed and water that culture, you're not going to be able to maintain it.
Yeah, you're going to lose the designation. And
exactly.
Spoiler alert, Maureen, you may or may not know this about nurse.com, but when we work with companies who are seeking to recruit nurses and they would like to put their jobs on the job board for nurse.com, nurse.com's been around for 30 years. And we have recently, probably in the last year and a half or so, revamped our job posting experience. One of those things is that we offer employers an employer landing page, essentially, like a profile, an employer profile. And one of the things that we say to employers when we are talking to them is that if you want to differentiate yourself, you should make sure that you are sharing your magnet logo, or that you are a Daisy partner, or that you are a top workplace, and all of those things matter to the nurses who are coming and looking for employment. How do you stand out? So that's something that we've been talking about. And so we talk about magnet all the time over here.
I believe that 100%, that really showing the world, you know, really does hold them accountable. But I would also say, I love that you're doing that. We talk a lot about, we have the transition to practice program. And whether you're a new graduate or whether you are transferring into a new organization, you should know, are they PTAP accredited? You know, do they have that credential? Because what is that experience? Or at least ask the questions. It's also a criteria for Magnet that they have a practice transition program. But it's really, how are you getting that nurse and getting them to feel part of that culture, to really feel like they belong? That sense of belonging is so important to nurses. It drives a lot of us. That's a very, we tend to be, whether we're still about 13% male across the U.S. for our percentages. But I think that in general, we tend to be very people connected. So we want to feel that sense of belonging. So how are they bringing you in? Do they have a PTAP credential, or do they have a program for bringing you in and transitioning to practice? And we say that for the new grads too. Like, there's things you should look for in an organization, and at least have these interview questions. We actually have a document that Certification, NCPD, PTAP, Pathway, and Magnet all created together on questions to ask when you're interviewing about that. Like, how do you bring us in? How do you continue that relationship? Yeah.
We're going to have to make sure that we share all of those resources. And so for those of you who are listening, we'll make sure that on our landing page, so on thenurse.com/podcast, you'll be able to find this episode. And when you find this episode, we'll make sure that we have some resources there available for you. One of them, I think, really interesting that you just mentioned is those questions that you could be asking in your interview process, because it starts to create a narrative that these organizations, they start to listen to those questions that are being asked of them. They start to go, gosh, you know what? The last 20 applicants that have come through here have asked us about, you know, do we have a residency program? Do we have, you know, what are these resources that are available to me as an employee? And you start to raise the bar just by showing them that you have this expectation.
Yeah. And I will say, not only the ones that we've already talked about, but wellness. The Pathway to Excellence program has just developed a whole new wellness credential. And what are they doing for their nurses to make sure that they have a moment if something has happened? And I saw your background. You, I'm sure, had many times that you really needed a moment to gather your thoughts and to care for yourself. And yeah, this wellness program or wellness credential that Pathway has developed is exactly about that. Like, what are you doing for your nurses? And as Dr. Christine Pabico, who leads that program, always says, you know, it's not unusual to say, what do you have in place for your wellness? And they'll give you a list of things. But is it being utilized? Is it what the nurses actually looked for? So that's kind of the difference between, okay, we have a framework, but are you really implementing it the right way? Are you really having nurses helping making those decisions, which is, again, a huge hallmark of Magnet?
Yes, that's exactly right. And sometimes I think organizations think, well, I'll spend $200,000 and we'll hire a chief wellness officer. And you're like, well, that didn't do anything for us. You know, having access to therapy, that goes a long way. I was just having this conversation the other day where I was recalling this time where I had two patients that passed away in the same evening, a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old. And the attending who was on service, you know, lovely, lovely woman, she said, I need you to bring the 2-year-old downstairs and I need you to assist in the autopsy. And I was very new. I didn't know whether I should say yes to that or no to that, or, you know, that's probably going to really devastate me. And then I was just back the next day. You know, I don't recall anyone actually asking me, do I need the day off? Do I need to have some debriefing? And we were a Magnet hospital at the time, you know? Yeah. So, but Magnet's come a long way, right? And to your point is that you are implementing things like wellness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Magnet does have criteria for wellness. And I will say, again, it's that evolution of where we are, not only as a profession, but as a society, where I think we have a lot more awareness. And it's, you know, my parents' generation, and even I would say some of my generation would have that idea of, you know, you just tough it out, you know, it is what it is, move on. Fortunately, now we do understand the emotional impact, and we do have criteria in the MAGNET framework that organizations have to provide examples on wellness. And we see a lot of examples now about doing kind of a meeting with the nurses to have that debrief and be able to talk about what they're going through. We also see a lot of therapies such as offering Reiki, offering massage, you know, and obviously you can't necessarily do that, but there's a recognition that nurses need to pause and be able to take care of themselves. And they have to have the right tools, the tools that work for them, because what you need might be very different than what I need. And yep. So how are they making sure that whoever the nurse is, they have the right tools in place to be able to help them?
Yeah, it's not everybody. It's not a one size fits all. There's some people who need to talk and have talk therapy. And there's other people who want EMDR or other forms of therapeutic intervention. But having that space, and I think now more than ever, if you're an institution thinking about, should we be thinking about doing MAGNET? Should we be thinking about, you know, just even enacting the foundational elements of MAGNET in preparation for maybe eventually applying for the recognition? I can't impress upon people enough the importance of doing this, because nurses have to have this type of structure. They have to have these foundational elements in order for this to be sustainable. This practice won't be sustainable otherwise.
Oh, it's, you know, when we talk about nurses feeling unsupported, it's because they don't have those resources in their organization. And I don't think there's a hospital today that doesn't have an EAP program and things like that, but I would say nurses are still hesitant to take advantage of mental health support sometimes, and certainly we would encourage anyone to do that. And I think that we need to make sure that people feel that there isn't going to be any kind of stigma attached to it, and just be supportive, because it's a tough job. It's a really tough job. And you're exactly right. I think police did a really nice job very quickly on providing supports. I think that the first responders followed suit fairly quickly, but there's opportunity, I'm sure, in all the professions to continue to really figure out how to do a better job.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of kind of real-time surveying of nurses. And if there's a platform that you have access to, or that as an organization you have access to, where you can survey a nurse one or two questions, even at the beginning, end of their shift, I think that these are really important things. Like, did you feel like the care you provided today was safe? Were you able to provide safe patient care? Do you feel like you need any assistance? You know, have you experienced any kind of trauma? Are you feeling unsafe psychologically or emotionally? And is there any resources that you need? Even something like saying yes could be enough to alert a manager or someone that maybe you need help. So I think we need to do more of that, because I think we are really good about doing surveys, and we do them sometimes yearly or quarterly or whatever it may be. But sometimes there's things that are needed really in the moment.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's an interesting idea of a real-time daily kind of check-in. I suspect that it's driven by the unit that they're on, the type of care they provide. And I bet some are much more in tune to that. But that is, I know that the ANA side of the ANA Enterprise is releasing a new standards on ethics. And I suspect that there will be some of that more self-care. And the American Nurses Foundation has a whole toolkit for wellness and of nurses. So there are other resources within the enterprise.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to interview Cinda Rushton.
Yes.
Just love Cinda, and about the Resilient Nurses Initiative. And we interviewed Lucas about, he's the founder of something called Slow Talk.
Yes, I've spoken with them. Yeah.
Also really amazing. And so I'm excited to see how technology, but also just the trailblazers, the people who have been doing this work for decades, and how that combination of bringing people in like yourself or like Cinda Rushton, or, you know, bringing them in and pairing them with new technologies that can really, I think, move our profession forward and get us the type of information and feedback we need in order to make real-time changes, you know, impactful changes for nurses.
Yeah, it's funny. Cinda and I did talk about Slow Talk. We met with Lucas, and fascinating program. I absolutely agree. And what's funny is when I was doing my master's at Hopkins, Cinda was one of my professors. And I said, I don't know if you remember me. Of course she didn't. She's had a million students since then. But it always makes me smile a little bit. But to your point, it's not even just nurses. We have to be thinking bigger, and we need to be thinking about how we can impact the entire profession. And I think that when we start at the organization level with Magnet, or a framework that is evidence-based, and we make that change, and we're doing that research, and we're driving some of that expectations for culture, and then we continue to look beyond that and how we're talking to other nurses, and then moving even beyond that to the global piece. I love telling this story because I think about it's so true of nursing and how much we can connect and impact each other. I was visiting a hospital in Saudi Arabia, and I was touring one of the units, and the chief nurse said to me, we have nurses from 21 countries that work on this unit. And I said, how do you work with that, with all the DEI initiatives? And, you know, what do you have in place to ensure that the nurses are collaborating and you're having good outcomes? And he just looked at me, and I'll never forget, like, the surprise on his face that I would ask this question, because it just seemed so foreign to him. And he said, we all speak nursing. And I think that is where we need to be. We all need to be speaking nursing, and we all need to be supporting each other. And programs that we, like we have at ANCC, really do help to promote that. Because as we put these in place globally, then we can all be on the same page and driving our profession.
That, well, perfectly said. You could not have ended this with anything better than that, Maureen.
Kara, this has been so much fun. I was a little anxious, I have to admit. I was like, I don't know, a podcast is not something I've done before. It's been so much fun, and you've made it fun.
Well, now you've done it. So now you're going to be asked on many, many other podcasts.
We'll see. Anyway, I do very much appreciate your listening to my stories and asking the great questions about the program.
Absolutely. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
If you're a nurse or nursing student that enjoyed this episode, visit us at nurse.com/community. Where you can find the NurseDot discussion group, a place where we dissect each episode in detail and delve deeper into today's topics. NurseDot is a Nurse.com original podcast series. Production, music, and sound editing by Dawn Lunsford. Production coordination by Rhea Wade. Additional editing by John Wells. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in to the Nurse.podcast. Until next time, keep spreading the love and the care.